Good morning.
Morning.
It is a joy and a privilege to share with you in your gathering today, an honor to share in this time of worship. I was surprised before the service began to find among your members two who are dear friends to me and to the Samaritan Inn. Dr. Jim and Marilyn Hinton are here this morning, and Marilyn, if you did not know, served on the board of directors for 6 years, and we're grateful for her loyal and dedicated service to the Samaritan Inn and to the community. And of course, wherever Marilyn goes, Jim's got to go too. And so we're grateful for their friendship and their support, and what a delight and unexpected surprise to greet them and see them this morning. I love a good story, especially if it's a true one. A number of years ago in New York City, there was an astonishing thing that happened. A construction worker by the name of Wesley Autry was standing on one of New York's subway platforms with his two young daughters, ages 4 and 6. They were waiting for the next train to arrive at the station. Suddenly, another man on the subway platform, apparently suffering from a seizure, stumbled and fell off the platform down onto the subway tracks. In that instant, Wesley saw that there were headlights of an oncoming train coming down the tunnel, approaching that platform. Wesley Autry, acting quickly and with no thought for himself, jumped down onto the tracks to rescue the stricken man by dragging him out of the way of the train. But he immediately, in assessing the situation, realized that the train was coming way too fast, and there wasn't time to pull the man off the tracks. So what did Wesley do? He pressed the man down into the hollowed out space between the rails, and he spread his body out over the man to protect him as the train passed over the two of them. The train cleared Wesley Autry by mere inches, coming so close to him that it left grease marks on his knit cap. When the train came to a halt, Wesley called up to the frightened onlookers who had observed this whole event, and he said, "There are two little girls standing on the platform. Will you let them know that their daddy is okay?" Now, immediately, and for very good reason, Wesley Autry became a national hero. People were moved by his act of selflessness, and they marveled at his courage and his bravery. And indeed, what Wesley had done that day was considered remarkable. He had obviously no reason to help the man. The man was a stranger to him. He didn't know the man. He had his two young daughters, 4 and 6, to care for and to think about. And what he did was putting his own life at severe risk. But Wesley Autry that day in New York City in that subway tunnel saw someone in desperate need. And he not only saw the need, but he was moved with great compassion within his bowels and did what he could to save the man. The press called him the Subway Superman, the Harlem Hero. But the headline in one newspaper described Wesley Autry in terms of biblical writ. It read, "Good Samaritan saves man on subway tracks." I think we'd all agree Wesley Autry was a good Samaritan. And when I first read of his heroic deed, I wondered if I had been on that subway platform that particular day, what would I have done? Let me drive the point closer home to you. If you had been on that subway platform that day, what would you have done? Would we have shown the courage that Wesley shown? Would you have jumped down on those tracks with a train bearing down upon us to help that man? In other words, would you have been a good Samaritan? Now, many believe that that's exactly the question that Jesus of Nazareth was wanting people to ponder in another story, a parable, a story with a point. You heard it read just a few moments ago by Bill. And I haven't field tested the theory, but I happen to believe that this particular parable may be one of the most familiar and most commonplace in all circles, Christian or not. People know about this parable, and when they hear a good Samaritan, it conjures up images of what we mean by that. Now, we all know that the story that Jesus of Nazareth shared was in response to a lawyer's question, and the lawyer asked, "What must I do to inherit eternal life?" And Jesus then ensued into a conversation and a dialogue with this young lawyer, and back and forth they went. And then Jesus told the story that you heard read, and the point, "Who is my neighbor? Go and do likewise." Well, I happen to be a part of an organization that's called the Samaritan Inn, and for good reason. For 35 years, and you can go to the next slide, for 35 years, the Samaritan Inn has been working as a comprehensive program that teaches willing adults who are suffering the impact of homelessness and poverty to become responsible residents of North Texas. And in a nutshell, what we do at the Samaritan Inn is we take people from a point of crisis in their life, and I'm sure you would agree that being homeless without shelter is a crucial situation. We take people from that point of crisis and move them to thriving, helping the whole person and families with case management and housing and counseling and career development and financial education. Each and every day, next slide, Ron, we provide a safe and clean place for them to live. We provide 3 well-balanced meals, a mid-morning snack and a mid-afternoon snack. I bet you don't even get that at your place, right? We also pack 100 to 120 lunches every day. In order for our residents, in order for them to meet their savings goal, we encourage them to take a sack lunch that we've prepared rather than saving their hard-earned cash at Whataburger or Taco Bell. We provide all their needs at no cost. There are no fees for our services, for laundry and hygiene needs, shampoo and soap and toothpaste and razors and all that they need to live. And then we provide classes that help them in financial education and job readiness, in parenting, computer skills, life skills. And then we have on staff 5 counselors that are available to every one of our residents, young and old, to help them from that point of crisis to thriving. Now, since the completion of our new facility in March of this year, we are now at a capacity of 226 beds in our facility. Last night, about 72 children were a part of that. And I was thinking, as the children were gathered here this morning for this story, I think there were about 11 or 12 of them. Multiply that by 7, That's the number of children that we typically take care of each and every day. It's a huge responsibility. It's one that takes love and compassion and wisdom and a great deal of energy, let me tell you that. Now, you might say, I can't believe it, Rick, that there's a problem of homelessness here in North Texas. But homeless people are your neighbors. You may not even be aware of it. And the impacts of poverty are growing here in North Texas because of the lack of affordable housing, because of the lack of public transportation. Those of you who live here in Plano are blessed and fortunate because at least you have DART that comes as far as Parker Road. But beyond that to the north, those of us who live in McKinney and Frisco, in Allen, all of those municipalities have no access to public transportation. And because of those two main factors, each and every day, more people are slipping through the cracks and falling into homelessness. People who have education, people who have college degrees. It's not unusual for us to have people who've earned master's level and PhD level degrees that are in our program. People who had been earning six-figure salaries. But because of one life event, and I always say that every one of us in this room is one life event away ourselves from being homeless. The average American today has less than $4,000 in their savings to be able to meet the demands of one crucial life event. 64% of the homeless population, this is astounding, 64% of the homeless population in Collin County already are working. It's not that they're lazy and not willing to work. Nearly two-thirds of them are already working, and we find that to be true to the among the people who come to the Samaritan Inn for help. 60% of our residents, as I mentioned a minute ago, 60% have college education or some type of certification, an associate's degree or some type of professional certificate beyond high school education. And in 2018, there was a 9% increase in homelessness in Dallas and Collin counties, and primarily among the young and the old. Homelessness is getting younger, and homelessness is getting older. And we see that in the people who come to us for help. So what does the Samaritan Inn do? Well, let me just briefly explain the program. 7 days a week, we open our doors between the hours of 10 and 1:30 to do intake. We don't maintain a waiting list, and we ask people who are looking to us for help to come so that we can meet them and engage them in conversation to help understand where they are in their journey toward self-sufficiency and independence. Now, there are four things that they need to have when they come. First, they need to have some form of photo ID, government-issued photo ID, a Texas driver's license, some kind of government-issued ID with their Social Security card, and Social Security cards and birth certificates for their children. They need to be able to pass a drug test. So right on site, when they come to us for help, asking for our help, we ask them for some accountability as well. And so if they are currently a substance abuser, alcohol or drugs, we will immediately refer them to another agency within North Texas to address those issues of addiction before coming into our program. We are not a recovery program. And so we're just very honest with them that this is one of the requirements, this is what is necessary to come into our program. The drug test is done on the spot. If they pass, they've passed that box and can move on to the next. But if they don't, they're referred out. Thirdly, they can't have any violent criminal record. They can have a criminal record. In fact, we have individuals in our program right now who are felons, who've been convicted of felonies or misdemeanors. The critical issue is, have they been convicted of some battery or assault? Why is that? because we have nearly 200 people and volunteers and staff on top of it, that we need to protect them, and particularly the 70-plus children who stay in our facility every night. So we cannot take a chance on someone who has that background in battery and assault. And then fourth and finally, they need to be willing to work. We are a two-work program. We believe that in order to get back to a place of self-sufficiency and independence, that people need to work. And so we help them in our career development classes with life skills, with interviewing skills, with resume writing, with coaching, all the rest, in order to help them find full-time employment. But if they're living on permanent disability or Social Security disability of some sort, that will be a disqualifier for them in our program. We are a two-work program. Now, the next slide will show you the path of moving from crisis to thriving, from the intake, the interview and the assessment, which typically takes a couple of hours with one of our program specialists, to the PT, the preparation period for them once they are accepted into our program. For the first 2 weeks, they're getting oriented, they're getting settled into their room assignment, they're finding out where they go for meals, they're finding out where they get their toiletries, all of those things. They're assigned a case manager and a counselor and all the rest. So that's a preparation period for them. Then they move on to learning and planning. And so there's classes that they are required to take. You cannot graduate from our program unless you've completed classes in career education and financial literacy. They begin planning a separate, individualized plan with their case manager and their counselor. We don't believe that one size fits all, because everyone is unique and at a unique place in their journey. And so their counselor and their case manager will sit down with them and help them make a plan and set some goals, moving them towards self-sufficiency. And then as they get closer to graduation, and last year in 2018, the average stay, this might surprise you, the average stay was 215 days. It takes nearly 9 months for individuals to complete all the requirements, to stabilize, to go through their counseling, their case management, to find employment, and then to identify permanent housing. And let me tell you right now, that is the biggest struggle that our residents are finding right now, is finding affordable housing in Collin County. Right now in McKinney, a one-bedroom apartment is going for $1,000 a month plus utilities. If you have a single parent who has two or three children and paying daycare expenses and they're earning a minimum wage, they have to be working 2.5 jobs. They have to be working 20 hours a day to be able to make it in Collin County. Just let that settle in for a minute. They have to work 20 hours a day to be able to make it. And that's just scraping by. That's not living in high on the hog or in the upper crust. So finding that affordable housing, big challenge here in Plano, big challenge in McKinney, bigger challenge in Frisco. The median home price in Frisco right now, last year, reached $500,000. And the monthly rent in Frisco right now is $1,600 a month. And so more and more, the people who are coming from through our program and graduating from our program and trying to identify permanent housing, we're having to send them north towards Sherman and Denison, and even that is getting challenging, or south towards South Dallas and other parts south of the metro area. It's the biggest problem, and our communities and our municipalities need to address this issue. And so I would urge you, if you have any voice at all, to join the fight that there's equity in housing and justice in housing, providing adequate, safe shelter that's affordable to all people. It's an important issue. And once they've identified housing and they're permanently employed, then they graduate. So it's more than just ending homelessness. it's really changing lives. And if you're familiar with Maslow's hierarchy of needs, moving from physiological needs, that is food, water, and sleep, and we find that those that preparation period when they first come in, crucial time, because many of them, many families have been living in their cars for months on end. Can you imagine sleeping in your car on a night last night when the low was, I think, 84 degrees? But that's what we see each and every day. Families who have all their earthly belongings packed in the trunk in the back seat, trying to find a public restroom to wash up, trying to find a place where they can get a meal. Families doing that each and every day, right here under our noses in Collin County. And so we take them from meeting those physiological needs all the way toward self-actualization, where they've got renewed self-esteem, a renewed sense of purpose. They become self-sufficient. They are now standing on their own legs. They are now becoming contributing members to their own home community, whether it's McKinney or Plano or Dallas or Frisco, wherever they land. How do we do this? We support our residents through housing. So again, we have shelter space for 226. We do it through career readiness. We do it through financial literacy. We do it through case management and counseling. And we provide youth services for all the children, the 70-plus children who are in our program. Now, this last week was the beginning for most school districts, not all, but most school districts started this last week. I believe Plano started last Monday. McKinney started on Thursday. But we serve students in our shelter from right now, I think we have five different districts that our students are going to. And if you want to look up in your dictionary the definition of chaos, I can give you a picture of it on the first day of school. Because we had 50-plus school-age children going on 10 different buses to four different school districts. And our children are always the first on the bus in the morning and the last on the bus in the evening. Do you know why we do that? We do that to prevent any chance for them to be mocked or bullied by their classmates or their peers. We don't want any of our children to suffer the indignity of being teased because they live in a homeless shelter. So our children are the first to be picked up in the morning, meaning that some of our kids are getting on their bus at 6 a.m. in the morning, meaning that our staff has to be ready to get them breakfast and have all of their school things ready, because mom and dad are often already at work. Our staff has to be ready to get them on the right bus. And that is a challenge, and it's never perfect, and this year was no different. It wasn't done with perfection. In fact, I talked with our program director the other day, and we had one little boy. It wasn't through any fault of ours at the Samaritan Inn, but the transportation system at one of the school districts, I won't identify which school district, but they messed up royally, and the little boy was delivered to the wrong place. Thankfully, some parent, some compassionate parent, some good Samaritan saw what was happening, contacted our staff. We were able to go and get him back to the inn safely and without, I think, too many emotional scars in the process. But it's a big job. And beyond just the busing and the lunches and things that we provide for our school students, our child advocate provides for all their educational needs and arranges tutoring every afternoon for students who are struggling in math or science or reading. We have volunteer groups that come in and help with that, volunteer tutors. If any of you are ever interested in being involved in that, we'd love to talk with you further about that. And I think, Bill, I'm not sure, but I think Joan was telling me that recently you had the dog therapy group, Bookhounds, come and talk to you. Bookhounds comes to the inn once a week on Wednesdays, and they bring their therapy dogs with them. And for any children who are struggling with reading aloud, Bookhounds assigns one of their therapy dogs to the child, and the child reads to the dog. It's a fascinating process to behold, to see, and the progress that the children make in reading. Why? Because the dog doesn't judge when there's a word that's mispronounced. Generally, the dog is sleeping. So it's a great, great program, and it's all volunteer-driven, and we depend on those volunteers. So it's a comprehensive program with accountability checkpoints, and we're helping them get work, save money. There's a minimum of $1,500 they have to have in their savings account before they can go into the final phase of our program, taking classes. There's responsibility for the adults in accepting a chore assignment. You can imagine having 200 people live under one roof. There's plenty of chores. And so we assign chores on a rotating basis, so they may be working in the kitchen or cleaning a bathroom or mopping a floor or vacuuming a carpet. And that chore responsibility is checked off by one of our program staff. And to live respectfully and at peace with one another. And to achieve that, we have a weekly house meeting to which the entire community comes, and we work out and iron out any problems that there may be. You can imagine having that many housemates that there's some problems that come with that. And so we try to stay on top of that. And so we empower people, and we provide not equality. This is one of my favorite illustrations of this. We don't provide equality, we provide equity. Because there are some who come to us that need a larger stool to stand on. There are some who don't need much of our help and can graduate in 3 months, but there are others who need lots of our help and may take 12 months. And that's why we individualize the program for each and every individual who comes through our program. We provide a family environment where there are common areas, places for them to rest, socialize, to enjoy a television program, to play board games. We provide bikes for our residents, for anyone who does not have an automobile. You heard me say earlier about the lack of public transportation in our part of the county. Anybody who doesn't have an automobile is hard-pressed, especially in their job search, to be able to get out wide enough. And so we provide them a bicycle to at least widen the scope of their job search. We have a pet program. It's currently on hold while we're waiting for the city to approve our permit. But we have a pet program that allows our residents to bring their pets to the inn and remove any barriers from them participating in our program. The resident is responsible for caring for their pet. We provide, through donations, pet food for them, and we have several veterinarians in the area who provide veterinary services during the time of their stay. It's a wonderful program. And you may not be aware, but there are people who are facing homelessness that would rather live in their car than give up their fur baby. And so you may be one of those. So we try to take that barrier away and say, hey, bring your pet. You're going to help us take care of that pet, but we don't want it to be an obstacle any longer. Just a little bit about us. We were founded in 1984, 35 years ago. We were founded by the Collin County Ministerial Association. We've grown from what was originally a 10-bed overnight shelter for men to now the 226 that we're able to serve every day. We're located in McKinney on Route 5, just north of 380. And we serve all of North Texas. In fact, 25% of our residents come from Dallas County, 40% come from Collin County, and the remainder come from other parts of Texas, and even now we're seeing some people come to us from out of state. 97% of our income, 97% of our income is raised through private donations, either from individuals, churches, or corporations. Only 3% come from some type of a government entity, grant, or financial aid. 82% of every dollar you give to the Samaritan Inn is used to go directly into our programs, as Bill mentioned in his very kind introduction, way too long, Bill, but it was very kind, that we have 49 staff people on staff right now. I think that slide needs to be updated because we have 49 right now. And we're rated as a 4-star top charity by Charity Navigator. So you can be assured that your personal donation and generous giving is going where it should go and is going to support people who are in need. By the numbers, I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about that, but by the numbers you can see the number of services that we provided in the last full calendar year. It's a pretty strong record, and I'm very proud of it and proud and privileged to be a part of it. And we need volunteers. Bill mentioned that we had 37 volunteers. It's actually 2,100 volunteers invested 37,000 volunteer hours last year. So we could not do what we do without volunteers. So if you're interested in being a part of that, we'd love to have a conversation with you about that and how you could be a part of it. But let me close with this. So Wesley Autry was called the Good Samaritan. And in Jesus of Nazareth's story, he told the young lawyer that he should go and do likewise. So I'm going to charge you, as you go out of this place today, that when you see a person in need, whether you know them or they're stranger to you, don't just look and pass by, but instead, go and do likewise. Amen.